Avoiding your unfinished home projects because you're not sure where to start? Thumbtack knows homes, so you don't have to. Don't know the difference between matte paint finish and satin? Or what that clunking sound from your dryer is? With Thumbtack, you don't have to be a home pro. You just have to hire one. You can hire top-rated pros, see price estimates, and read reviews, all on the app. Download today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Do you know about the true crimes that inspired a Bruce Springsteen album? Or the murders AC/DC was blamed for? How about Taylor Swift's violent stalkers? Or the suspicious deaths of Brittany Murphy and River Phoenix? These stories and more are told in the Disgraceland podcast, hosted by me, Jake Brennan, every Tuesday, where I dive deep into subjects from the dark side of music history and entertainment. So follow and listen to Disgraceland on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Nobody in Kansas City has sports like 96.5 The Fan.
Right side throw, touchdown! Kansas City! A 3-yard touchdown pass in overtime! Kansas City wins the game!
Welcome into The Drive with Carrington Harrison.
Back-to-back best sports talk hosts as voted on in the Pitch magazine.
Live from the Fan Studios, here's CDOT.
Let's do this. Another day, another dollar, another edition of The Drive. You were listening to The Drive on 96.5 The Fan, 96.5thefan.com, and also the Odyssey app. My name is Carrington Harrison. Excited, thrilled, delighted to be here with you on this wonderful Wednesday, and we are certainly hoping that the weather holds up tonight for the Kansas City Royals. Maybe you got plans to go out there today, and nobody wants to be at a wet baseball game. We got a lot to get into. Speaking of the Royals, coming up in about 15 minutes, Mark Canna will be on the show. His Instagram handle is at Big League Foodie. If there is one thing that this show is qualified to do, it is asking baseball players food questions. So we will talk to Mark Canna coming up in a little bit. We'll find out what restaurants in Kansas City he likes, where he's got an opportunity to try, what his favorite food city is. I'll give him some of my food takes. We'll hear some of his. We'll have a lot of fun with Royals outfielder Mark Canna coming up in a little bit. We also are going to take a trip to Pittsburgh and also Dallas. Maybe you missed it, but George Pickens, he has been traded earlier today from the Pittsburgh Steelers to the Dallas Cowboys. Before we get to very important things, I want to remind you guys to listen every day at 2 o'clock right here on 96.5 The Fan. And number two, it would make me really happy if you could just tell one friend to check out the show. You don't got to tell two, just tell one friend, hey, that show on 96.5 The Fan, the show in the afternoons, I like that show. I would appreciate it. This is where I would like to start today's show. Denny Matthews has been the Royals' voice from day one. Not day two, the very first radio voice you heard for the Kansas City Royals was Denny Matthews. He is still the radio voice. He has seen a lot of incredible baseball. Denny Matthews has sat through a lot of disappointing and heartbreaking baseball. Denny's been coming on the show now for about a decade, and I enjoy Denny Matthews. I would consider Denny to be a personal friend. So when Denny tells us some things, I try to listen. I try to pay attention to it because he has a very unique perspective being the voice of a major league team since the late 60s. Denny Matthews told me last year that the Chicago White Sox were the worst baseball team he's ever seen. And for somebody who called the 90s Royals and the 2000s Royals, that piqued my interest. So when Denny Matthews says that about the Royals opponent, and then he says this about the Royals opponent, somebody who has certainly sat through his share of bizarre innings involving the Kansas City Royals, listen to the Hall of Famer Denny Matthews on the ninth inning against the White Sox.
Lead at first, in comes the pitch, jammed him in a high pop-up on the infield, and It's off the glove of the second baseman. They're going to throw the ball to second. Lively. They had a forced play there. And here you go. The White Sox are on the verge of burping up this game. It's the old story, folks. He squares the body, gets it down. How are they going to mess this one up? No throw. Boozer picked it up, had no play. And the bases are loaded. And the White Sox are on the verge of handing the Royals the game. So I started to say, it's a familiar refrain, same old story. Good teams figure out a way to win in the late innings. Bad teams figure out a way to lose in the late innings. And boy, if we haven't seen a perfect example of that right here in front of us in the last 5 minutes, then you need another videotape, because this is just a perfect example. Jake, you said it off air. You said that might be the worst ninth inning of any major league game I have ever seen. And I've seen a few, and it would probably make my top five. That was,
it's up there.
It was embarrassing.
Do you guys know how bad of a performance that you have to put together for Denny Matthews, who is 82 years old, who was behind the microphone for the Royals' first game in 1969? Do you understand how bad you have to play for Denny Matthews to say that what you did makes his top five of anything? I mean, top five greatest innings of all time, top five worst innings that we have ever seen. You are a different level. You are a different caliber of a bad baseball team. And that's what the White Sox are. I know you guys were getting your thumbs ready to type that Rob and I jinxed them yesterday. I could feel it building. Off the segment that we did yesterday, you guys couldn't wait to jump on this show for telling you guys how bad the White Sox are and how the Royals completely own and dominate that team. I hope you now see I was right. The White Sox are worse than any Royals team that we have ever seen. They are, in fact, the worst baseball team that we have ever seen. Yesterday was not about the Royals winning, and I am not here to take away from the Royals at all. This is professional big league baseball. All that matters is the W and the L's. Yesterday's ninth inning had absolutely nothing to do with the Royals. It had everything to do with the White Sox, and they are on an historically low point and peak in their history. They are bad. I mean, really bad. And the Royals are doing exactly what you are supposed to do every time that team is put in front of you. Pound them. They did it last year to the tone of 12-1. They are currently doing it. They shut them out in game one. And yesterday, you didn't need to do anything. You simply moved out of the way and let the White Sox be the White Sox. All you had to do is not mess it up. The baseball gods gave you a blessing yesterday. They gave you a win. You probably don't win that game against any other team in Major League Baseball. But you know what the baseball gods decided? You got the White Sox on the schedule. So we're going to give you this one. The White Sox are going to put together a Benny Hill laugh track of errors and mistakes and bad plays that are going to allow you to steal this win and more than likely sweep this series against a team that right now looks and appears to be absolutely hopeless. Coming up in a little bit, we're going to be joined by Mark Canha. We're not going to do a Royals lineup today. We can do one later in the show, but I do want to give you guys my thoughts on this Cowboys and Steelers trade. A couple of things. Number one, I don't think that George Pickens is a winning player. A lot of times when Barber and I go back and forth and we have our sparring sessions, Barber talks about there are things that are beside the black box. And sometimes I think that is an excuse to not evaluate the player and his performance, but sometimes he's right. If you are looking at George Pickens' career, on paper, he's phenomenal. He had 800 yards as a rookie, had 1,100 yards as a sophomore, had 900 yards last year in the NFL and 3 touchdowns. He is a big play, proven wide receiver. He's 24 years old. We're not even talking about a player who has entered his peak. We're talking about a player who is still on a rookie contract as a second-round pick. There are a lot of things to like about George Pickens, the player. He quit on Pittsburgh last year. He has constantly been a headache and constantly been an issue for the Pittsburgh Steelers. I know that the draft selection didn't work out for Kansas City, and it is one of those what-if scenarios. And Pickens was one of those players that coming out of Georgia that for those of us that try to, well, I think Kansas City wants to go in this direction, or I think they like this player. You knew that George Pickens was going to be a player that the Chiefs had an opportunity to draft. And maybe you have thought, man, they should have drafted him over Sky Moore. No, they shouldn't have. I know what happened with Sky Moore in his career. I know that things haven't worked out. It wasn't going to work out with George Pickens either. And I think we have seen enough Brett Veach drafts to know the players that he is attracted to. Say what you want about Rashee Rice. His issues don't really appear to be on the football field. His issues don't appear to be getting along with him. The issue that happened with Xavier Worthy, the issues don't appear to be, hey, that guy's not a good teammate. Hey, that's not a guy that I want to round the rest of my locker room. I'm not making it seem like the Chiefs draft all choir boys and that they have a spotless history, but I do think it is clear what the Chiefs are willing to tolerate and what they're not willing to tolerate, and that's not what Pittsburgh is. Pittsburgh doesn't care about those things. I mean, the red light is flashing, and the Steelers just, we think we can make it work. I mean, at this point, you drafted Antonio Brown. You drafted Deontay Johnson. You drafted George Pickens. For an organization that exemplifies strength and dominance and one of the pillars of the National Football League, they are willing to look the other way on these things. Kansas City isn't. It was never going to work with George Pickens in Kansas City. I don't care what he's done on the field. I don't care what his football card looks like. I don't care how many touchdowns, how many yards per catch. It was never going to mesh in Kansas City. They don't like that kind of personality. Hey, we're winning, but you're mad that you only got 3 catches for 27 yards. Wait, can we count on you? Are you dependable? Are you going to? They don't deal with that. And that is exactly what George Pickens is. And today, you saw a team who essentially gave away a player who was averaging somewhere around 950 to 1,000 yards a season and 4 or 5 touchdowns on a rookie deal. And just, here, you have them. We don't want them. Here, take them. I mean, a team wouldn't even give you this before the draft. You don't get the compensation for George Pickens until next NFL draft. A team just said, we're good. No thanks. That says something. That speaks volumes that a team was essentially willing to give up on a talent like George Pickens. And I think we all knew that you were not going to be able to bring him back into your locker room. Not all character issues, quote unquote, are the same. And all character concerns are the same. I don't think that you can build a winning culture and build a winning team when players like George Pickens are in the middle of it. And I think Kansas City knew that from the very, very beginning. All right, we're going to take a little bit of a break here. Coming up on the other side, we're going to be joined by Royals outfielder Mark Canha. That's coming up. Keep it right here. So Drive.
You're listening to The Drive with Carrington Harrison.
For the first time in a long time, I'm willing to dream that this can be a special season for the Missouri Tigers.
Brought to you by DM Entry Law. Have you or a loved one been in a car wreck? Contact DM Entry Law today and get the money you deserve. Car wreck? Remember, Mike's got this. 96.5 The Fan.
We are very happy to be joined by our next guest. For the first time this season, a Royals player calls into the show. Mark Canha, Royals outfielder, set to join us. Mark, happy to have you join us today.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Mark, we usually have a rule where we don't ask baseball players or athlete sports questions, but after a ninth inning like yesterday, and certainly when you were in the middle of it, we have to ask you about it. What was it like to be in the middle of everything that happened last night at Kauffman?
It's great. I mean, we needed to get something going in that ninth inning, and we did, and a lot of excitement, a lot of kind of wild baseball plays, and we came out of there and kind of feels like we stole that one.
Have you ever been a part of a game or an ending like that?
Yeah, probably. I mean, I play a lot of baseball games, so I've seen a lot of weird stuff and played a lot of close ones and a lot of crazy ones for sure.
I have one more baseball question, then I want to talk food with you because you are at Big League Foodie. Tell us the story about your first major league home run.
Let's see. It was probably my third or fourth game in the big leagues. And, yeah, I was swinging the bat really well. I kind of got my career off on a hot streak and I found myself in a good hitter's count and, hit one up into the seats in left center field at the Oakland Coliseum.
Where is that baseball? Like, how does that work when you hit a home run? Do you try to go get it back? Do you still have the ball from your first home run?
Yeah, I have it. But they're not allowed to authenticate those balls because once a ball leaves the playing surface, in other words, that when you hit a home run, it goes over the fence, they say that they can't authenticate that was actually the ball. So it's not authenticated, but I do have it. A fan traded it at the time for a Sonny Gray signed baseball. So I was able to, get that.
Right now.
The clubhouse manager tracked it down for me.
Well, good. I'm glad that you have it. Right now we're talking to Mark Canna. We're going to talk some food here with them in a little bit. This is a movie question that is kind of a baseball question. Are you more of a major league person or Bull Durham?
Oh, good question. Two good ones. I think Bull Durham's a little bit more of a classic. I kind of lean towards that. They're both really funny, though. I love and quote both of them all the time. And two good ones, but I'm going to lean Bull Durham.
I don't know anything about minor league baseball, but Bull Durham feels like a very accurate representation of what it's like to be a minor league baseball player.
Yeah, I would say it's a romanticized version of that. Certainly it does kind of give me a little bit of nostalgia when you watch that in the best way.
All right,
about the minor leagues, as much as you can have nostalgia about being in the minor leagues.
Mark, I have some random questions for you. When you get a plane, are you a window or an aisle seat guy?
I like the aisle seat because I'm a little bit of a larger person. I like to stick my legs out in the aisle and get a little extra leg room that way.
See, my answer for this is kind of dependent on how tired I am. Like, if I plan on going to sleep on the plane, I like having the window seat because I can lean up against something. To me, it's kind of harder to go to sleep if you're in the aisle. But the aisle has all the advantages that you're talking about.
Yeah, that's kind of moot for me because I have a hard time sleeping on planes.
Yeah, I'm kind of the same way. If I can go to sleep, I don't go to sleep for more than maybe an hour. Like, I envy people that can just get on the plane and then you wake up in the destination. That has never been me.
Oh, must be nice.
Mark, I believe that everybody has one of those, like, guilty pleasure shows, like Pawn Stars or Chopped or Bar Rescue. What show does that count for you? Like, what is your show that you will always stop and watch it when it's on?
I'm going to go with The Office. That's kind of, I don't know if it's like guilty pleasure. I think guilty pleasure, I kind of think of reality TV when you say that, but I really don't watch any reality TV, but whenever The Office is on, I'm definitely turning that on.
Okay, that's good, because I was going to ask you, because you and I are around the same age, you know, what is your 90s sitcom of choice? Because The Office is a little bit more modern, but everybody kind of has that favorite 90s show. Like, I love Fresh Prince of Bel-Air. What's your 90s sitcom of choice?
For me, it's Seinfeld, definitely.
I got a chance.
Big Seinfeld guy.
I got a chance to hear him do stand-up. He was here at the T-Mobile Center not that long ago. Very, very funny live.
Yeah, he's awesome. I actually met him last year, or not last year, it would have been 2 years ago at the All-Star break. I just happened to run into him, complete like coincidence, and he's a huge, I was playing for the Mets at the time, and he's a huge Mets fan, and so he actually recognized me before I recognized him, and that was pretty cool.
What is it like to get recognized by Jerry Seinfeld?
It was, I had to pinch myself a little bit for sure. It was just crazy.
I'm guessing that Seinfeld, that he is the most famous person that you have ever met. Before you met Seinfeld, who would your answer have been to the most famous person that you had met?
I don't know. Probably like people in the baseball world. I met Shakira one time. That was cool. When you play for the Mets or any New York team, I would imagine you get to meet a lot of like cool people. Like Bad Bunny was in our clubhouse one time. Shakira came through. A lot of good ones. But yeah, maybe Shakira.
All right, this leads me to a music question. When you guys are just sitting in the clubhouse, who controls the music? Who's playing the tunes to get you guys ready to go play?
I think it kind of rotates, but Salvi definitely has some influence. Bobby's on there. I'm gonna go with those two. I think are the ones controlling it when I'm paying attention.
Right now, we're talking to Mark Canna for a few more minutes here. His Twitter handle is @BigLeagueFoodie. All right, I have to start with this. I don't know if you're willing to go on record about this because you know us Kansas Cityans take this very serious. I'm sure you've had some barbecue. Where's your favorite barbecue restaurant since you've been here?
Oh, you know what? I'm not well-versed on the barbecue yet. I haven't got out enough. I've been to Arthur Bryant's. I've been to Gates. Between those two, I don't know. I kind of thought they were very similar. This was actually the times I went to those, I was doing it as a visiting player. But I'll say Gates for now. I got a list of people have been, you know, sending me recommendations all the time, which I love. And so I got some work to do on the Kansas City barbecue scene.
It sounds like you have some work. What makes somebody a foodie? Like I was on your Instagram and you're always eating at these nice places and taking pictures. Whenever you talk food with somebody, how do you know that this person like you is also a foodie?
I can just tell by... you know, you just have to have a deep appreciation for food and kind of an understanding of what is going on in the food scene in different places and all over the country. And I think it's just that love for food and that interest in it as like a cultural kind of phenomenon. And I always like to follow a bunch of chefs on Instagram, and I'm always going to different places and just kind of observing and appreciating everything that all these great places are doing.
Mark, give me your favorite city whenever you guys are, you know, you're going around the country, you're going out of the country. What is the city you're really excited about because you love their local food scene?
I'm a little biased, but San Francisco is always my favorite just because I'm from that area. And I lived there for 6 years. So I'm biased towards San Francisco, but a few others. I mean, New York is obviously great. I love eating in Miami. I love eating in Seattle. L.A. is really good, too. Like, I like going to K-Town in L.A. and doing all that stuff. And mainly kind of the bigger markets, I guess you could say. But, I mean, there's good food everywhere.
Mark, which city has better pizza? Is it Chicago or New York?
I'm going to say New York, but actually I played in Detroit last year, and Detroit should be on that upper echelon of lists of pizza places, because that's my sleeper pick. I'll say that.
What is unique about this Detroit pizza? I don't know if I've ever had Detroit style pizza before. What are they doing there?
Have you ever had Little Caesars?
I have.
Yeah, so it's Little Caesars basically, but like that's the Little Caesars with the crispy edges with the cheese on the edge, where it's kind of like black and crispy and like the square slices. That is kind of what New York pizza is like. That's a version of it, and there's really good versions of it all around the city.
What is your favorite kind of food? Like American, Italian, Chinese food? Like if you had to like give me like your favorite genre of food.
It's sushi. It always has been. I like everything. I like all kinds of food, obviously. There's nothing I won't eat, but good sushi for me is my favorite.
All right, I'm going to ask you a couple of food items here, and I just need a thumbs up and thumbs down, and I get you out of here. Where are you at on baked beans? Thumbs up or thumbs down?
Baked beans, not my favorite. I'm going to go thumbs down.
All right, how about coleslaw?
I'll eat them, but not my favorite.
All right, so thumbs down on baked beans. Where are you at with coleslaw?
Coleslaw is a thumbs up. Got to have coleslaw, I think, because when you have rich foods or, you know, barbecued meats or whatever, you need that freshness of the coleslaw. I'm a coleslaw guy for sure.
All right. I have to ask you this because the text line always gets on me. I love Dippin' Dots. I think Dippin' Dots are a great ballpark treat. Where are you at with Dippin' Dots? Thumbs up or thumbs down?
Thumbs up. Absolutely. Amazing.
Mark, you know what? I like hearing that. Mark, you know what? After this, we're going to take you to some barbecue restaurant. You can't be a foodie and you've only been to two of these places. I'm born and raised in Kansas City. There's plenty of great barbecue you haven't had yet. I will make it my mission to take you to one of them.
I know. I'm a little ashamed. I've been checking some other boxes. I've been getting out to basically, I think, a lot of good restaurants that aren't barbecue, but yeah, you're absolutely right. I got some work to do.
And that is Mark Canha joining us on the show today. He plays outfield for your Kansas City Royals. And at some point, we are going to have a nice lunch or dinner date, taking him somewhere to have barbecue. Mark, we really appreciate your time. Thanks for popping on today.
All right. Thanks.
Absolutely. That is Mark Canha joining us on the show today. I mean, you call yourself big league foodie. He's been in the league, what, 12 years, Rob? You've been to two barbecue restaurants since you've been here. This is the barbecue capital of the world. I can't let Mark Canha go out like that. We got to take him somewhere. He's been to Gates. He said he's been to Bryant's. I mean, my man's never had a Z-Man before. He's never had the ribs at Jack Stack. He's never gone to Slaps. Shout out to my guys over at Harp's Barbecue. Oh, we got to fix this. We got to take him somewhere. I can't live like this as a lifelong Kansas City. And this isn't right.
I mean, I was surprised only two. I will say, I do agree with him here. Detroit style pizza is low key slept on. It's not the best because New York exists, but it's low key slept on. Really good Detroit style pizza. I can't believe you called it Little Caesars, but really good Detroit style pizza is good pizza. Now, he gets it.
I'm going to be real. I love Little Caesars. Everybody has that pizza place that you love because you were in high school and college. That place for me is Little Caesars. You guys don't know how many games of Madden 2005, 2006 were fueled by me eating Little Caesars. You can get you a $5 hot and ready, but if I ask you, hey, tell me a little bit more about the pizza, and you say, have you had Little Caesars? I'm assuming their pizza ain't that good. Especially because if I ask you about Chicago, you're not telling me, hey, have you been to Pizza Hut before? If I tell you, hey, what about New York? You're not telling me, hey, have you had Papa John's before? I don't know if you're selling it. If I tell you, hey, you tell me it's good and your reference is Little Caesars, I don't know. It's questionable.
I disagree with this, the description of it's like Little Caesars. No. But it's big, square, thick crust. They put the sauce on top with a big dollop of cheese. If you have not had Detroit-style pizza at not Little Caesars, at a real place, go get some. It's a quality pizza. It's better than Chicago-style because Chicago-style is trash. That's worth noting, too.
Wow. That's when you said Chicago, you meant to say St. Louis? Is that what you meant to say?
Chicago and St. Louis are the Spider-Man meme when it comes to pizza.
Okay. All right. Let's move forward. I don't know what's going on over there. Obviously, you're having some issues at home right now, and I wish you wouldn't bring that to work with you because what you just said right there is crazy, and we should move on. Can we talk about Josh Simmons? Because there's something deeper going on there, but I don't know if we have the time to unpack all of the issues that are potentially going on in your personal life. So let's just move on. I want to read to you guys a little paragraph from Jeremy Fowler of ESPN. We can call him friend of the show, right? Jeremy Fowler's friend of the show.
100% friend of the show.
All right. He's not our best friend of the show in the NFL space. I would say that's James Palmer. James Palmer's our guy. I like James Palmer.
He's probably in the same friend category as Albert Breer. We're not besties. We're like, you know, acquaintances on Facebook.
Okay, that's fair. So Jeremy Fowler tweeted this out. Offensive tackle Josh Simmons to the Chiefs. My favorite picks typically come with some level of risk, but tremendous upside. And Simmons embodies that. Multiple scouts told me that his tape was the best of any offensive tackle this year. There are injury concerns, but if Kansas City can maximize Simmons' potential, then the Chiefs have drafted a premier left tackle for Patrick Mahomes' next chapter. The main reason that I love the Josh Simmons pick, I think, is perfectly captured in this paragraph. Yes, there is some level of risk. Now, I haven't checked his medicals. I'm not a doctor. I don't know. There is a chance that his knee injury, that he's different after the knee injury. There is a chance that the Chiefs roll the dice on a player and he will have these injury concerns. I mean, we're talking about a 300-pound individual who plays football with a living who had a pretty serious knee injury. So there is a chance that that comes back to bite Kansas City. But if there is an organization that has the leeway to take a player who has some level of risk but tremendous upside, as described by Jeremy Fowler, and if scouts are telling you, hey, the tape checks out, it's some of the other things. Character concerns were mentioned. I don't know what those could be, but character concerns could be an issue. Health could be an issue. But if you guys can figure this out, then you have a premier left tackle. In order to find a left tackle, you have to be in one of the three boxes. You have to be a bad team that drafts high. You have to be a team that is willing to spend a lot of money in free agency, or you have to be a team willing to take a chance. That's how you answer it at that position. I mean, I guess you could get lucky. Philadelphia got lucky. You're not planning on finding your left tackle in round 7, and that guy ends up being one of the 5 best left tackles in the National Football League. That's usually not how it works for most teams. But if you can deal with one of those three things, you got a shot. In some ways, the Chiefs have kind of been trying to go cheap at left tackle. Well, I mean, we think we can draft somebody in the 3rd round. We think we can get somebody late 2nd round. I mean, I guess we can go get Donovan Smith. No, for the first time in a while, the Chiefs have taken a swing at the position. We'll see if they hit a home run or not. But if they do hit a home run, they have answered one of the toughest questions to answer of any position on your roster. The Chiefs can find a Travis Kelce replacement. They can find wide receiver replacements. You can replace certain things if you lose. We saw last year, we've seen, it's really hard to fill left tackle if you're A, not willing to spend the money to go get a damn more Trent Williams, like if you're not willing to be heavy hitters in free agency, or you're not willing to give up substantial draft pick compensation to move up to go get said player. So, friend of the show, Jeremy Fowler, I love what he had to say about Josh Simmons. I am in 100% agreement with what they had to say about Josh Simmons.
I feel like Josh Simmons, and maybe I'm just seeing this through the lens of I do this for a living, I'm in Kansas City, but it feels like for a lot of different reasons, Josh Simmons might be one of the more polarizing takes in the first round of the NFL draft. Because there are two trains of thought. One, the tape doesn't lie. And when the tape is on, you know how NFL people like to talk about the tape. When the tape is on, he is one of the best left tackles in college football. And he was a guy who we've heard reports that he could go top five. Ryan Day, again, not a great litmus test, said he'd be the number one left tackle if he'd stayed in school. Like, we have Todd McShay. I can play cuts. The tape doesn't lie. The tape is he's a great left tackle. The overarching question, and the question that we'll have for maybe the next 12 to 18 months with Joshua Simmons is, it's going to be his health. I mean, he says he's ready to go by training camp. The Chiefs said he's going to be ready to go by training camp. We will see up in St. Joe how much of a go he is. But you and I both believe he's mostly a redshirt player this year. So it's basically, you know, for to keep the college analogy, a medical redshirt. I don't think we'll know for sure, unless there's an injury during the season, until the 2026 campaign. But if the Chiefs got the player that the tape says they got, it's a huge win. But the health question isn't going to go away, and it's not going away anytime soon.
No, it's not going to go away at all. I feel like we have to play this before, I mean, just, I know we don't have a lot of time left in this, but just how the Royals won yesterday is just, it is one of the most remarkable wins that the Royals have had in a decade or so. It probably will not be a win that we'll talk a lot about, but one thing about baseball is, at least in the regular season, we don't really spend a lot of time talking about like regular season wins that much in baseball, but man, the losses, they stick with you. And when you lose a game, how the White Sox lost yesterday, oh my goodness.
The 1-0 pitch. High fly ball, center field's going to end the game, whether he catches it or not. He doesn't. It just drops, and the Royals win it. What a way to end the game.
Denny Matthews said it is one of the five craziest innings that he has ever seen. He's been calling baseball games since the late 60s. The late 60s. Top five, he said yesterday about the White Sox. They got to quit playing baseball. What's that thing you guys do in soccer? Relegation? They got to relegate them. I'm sorry. They got to relegate them. You got to bring up somebody's AAA team. The Louisville Bats, got to bring them up. I don't know what's going on with the White Sox. They can't stay here anymore. They can no longer continue to be a 4A big league ball club. They have not been a major league ball club since Paul Konerko was playing first base for them. They are absolutely embarrassing. Coming up on the other side, injuries usually shape the NBA playoffs, and they're doing that right now. Keep it right here. It's The Drive.
The Drive with Carrington Harrison, your home for the best food takes in KC.
Regular old American nachos. You know, I don't need jalapenos with mine, just chips. Cheese.
Brought to you by DM Injury Law. Have you or a loved one been in a car wreck? Contact DM Injury Law today and get the money you deserve. Car wreck? Remember, Mike's got this. 96.5 The Fan.
Honey, it's me, your wife.
Sometimes you guys try to give me a hard time for cheering for Mizzou. Well, you didn't go to Mizzou. How do you cheer for him? Because I grew up in Missouri. Like, how did you become a Chiefs fan or a Royals fan? I'm guessing it's because you grew up in the area. That makes sense to me. Rob is a Cleveland Cavaliers fan. Now, nothing wrong with cheering for a team that you didn't live in the area or not, but it's not like Rob is a LeBron fan, so therefore you cheered for Cleveland, and then when he moved to Miami, you became a Miami fan. Then you became a Lakers fan. That makes sense to me. I go where he goes. If LeBron goes to play for the Memphis Grizzlies, well, then I cheer for the Memphis Grizzlies. But no, Rob has stayed true to the Cleveland Cavaliers, which doesn't make any sense because when they haven't had LeBron, they have been one of the more disappointing teams in NBA history. Rob has been walking around real excited about this team, which makes sense. They won the Eastern Conference in the regular season. They were the one seed. You could argue they were the best team in the NBA regular season. But there is no sport that we watch where the postseason and the regular season are as far apart as the NBA. Rob, your team's getting out of here. Now, a lot of it is due to injuries. You didn't have Evan Mobley. You didn't have DeAndre Hunter. You're missing some key pieces. You didn't have Darius Garland. Those be the breaks in the NBA playoffs. But for a season where you guys were fighting for respect, fighting for why nobody believes in us, why no one thinks that we can win the NBA championship, you're about to lose in the second round to the Indiana Pacers. So next year when you guys are back, we're not, I want to let you know that we are not falling for it. We didn't fall for it this time. We doubly are not falling for it next year because you guys have tried to hoodwink us, bamboozle us, led us astray. That was a game, even in the face of the injuries they had last night, you got to figure out a way to win that one. You had a lead late with a minute to go, and you let Tyrese Halliburton cook you on your home floor, and now they're going back for two games in Indiana. All you need is one to go up 3-1 in this series and really put the screws to your Cavs. Your basketball team's season ended last night at home. It's sad, man.
Often in, you know, NCAA tournament games, playoff games, you know, do or die type of games, it's the little things. Rebounding, inbounding the ball, passing. There was no problem scoring last night, but down the stretch, you know what they couldn't do? Get the ball inbounds. They couldn't make free throws. They did not rebound on the final possession at all, which gave Halliburton a chance. Just, it is always the little things in the postseason. It's never, oh man, we really struggled to score. I mean, that happens, but it is always the little things. And that's what came to be last night. I don't think they're as dead as you do, because if they get their players healthy, I think they can beat the Pacers, but their players aren't healthy right now, so there's nothing they can do about it.
We also saw yesterday that Steph Curry, he went out. He has a hamstring injury. He is going to miss a week of action. The hope is to try to get Steph Curry back around game 5, game 6. People believe that he could potentially be back. They did win game 1 of that series, so we'll see what happens with them. And, I mean, they do have Jimmy Butler. Like, if you got Jimmy Butler as your best player, you got a shot. You got a shot. You got a shot to win that series. So we'll see how that potentially goes. We'll see how things play itself out. But Golden State, they took care of business in their first game, 99-88. I mean, very simple for Minnesota. You got to shoot it a lot better than they've shot it. We talked yesterday about three-pointers and how these NBA teams are just taking so many threes. I mean, yesterday, Minnesota was 5 for 29 from three. They didn't shoot it well against the Lakers. That's one thing. Well, you don't shoot it well against the Warriors, a team that we know historically can shoot it pretty well. It's probably not going to end up very well for you. You're also not going to do very well when your best player, Anthony Edwards, 9 for 22 and 1 for 5 from the floor the way that he was yesterday. That probably means a loss for you, and that's what it meant yesterday for the Minnesota Timberwolves. I want to play this audio clip for you guys because sometimes you guys think that I am turning into the old guy that just screams about things. And I don't want to be that, but you know, I am getting a little bit older. I see the world through a little bit of a different lens. But one thing I try not to be is a hater. I don't want to be a hater. I want to let the young generation have their fun. In fact, I want to tell other people who are in my same shoes to let the kids have their fun. How can we make fun of the music that they were listening to when you were listening to the Macarena and Soulja Boy? Let them listen to the goofy music they listen to and wear the funny clothes that they wear. I don't hate on these young kids. I want them to live life and experience it the way that we did. Not everybody feels that way. Listen to some drama happening regarding some little kids just trying to play basketball.
When Lily Moding and her husband first installed this basketball hoop for their two young boys, they thought it would be a way for their family to stay active and healthy. They never dreamed it would become a source of neighborhood drama and the subject of lawsuits and legal action from their neighbor.
I have lost so much sleep over this. It's been so stressful.
Lily says about a year ago, new neighbors moved in next door and raised concerns about the location of their basketball hoop. The Modings discovered it was about 6 inches too close to the property line, so they had it moved with the city's approval.
We had to move it to where you see right now, so that is fully approved by the zoning board.
But it didn't end there. The neighbor filed a restraining order against Lily's husband, which was dismissed with prejudice. They've now filed a civil lawsuit against the family and the city of St. Louis Park, all stemming from this hoop.
I have a sense of dread because we've just been under attack for a year.
The neighbor also asked the court for a temporary injunction to prevent the boys from playing basketball in their own driveway throughout the summer months, citing safety concerns and that kids are trespassing by fetching balls that bounce onto their property. Lily tells me they set limits on what time their kids can play.
Like 20 minutes and then they're off to do something else. So we truly don't feel like we're being unreasonable about any of this.
Now, I did reach out to the neighbor who is behind this lawsuit for comment about all of this, but haven't heard back.
If you're wondering, yes. That's all I'm going to say. As you were hearing that, if you were thinking, I'm here to tell you, yes, you would be correct. You are absolutely correct. Rob, we're against the kids going outside to play now? I mean, this was a staple when you were a kid. You go outside in the driveway, get you some hoops in. The neighborhood kids would come around. You'd play a nice little two-on-two, three-on-three game. You drink water out of the hose. That's what built character when you were a kid. Now we're filing injunctions and temporary orders to try to keep the kids from going outside. We can't do both. We can't be mad at the kids for staying inside and playing Fortnite. We can't be mad at the kids for staying inside all day and playing the Call of Duty and then get mad when they try to go outside and do something active, something positive. What is wrong with this person? We hating against the kids going outside and playing basketball. I could understand if they were playing basketball at all hours of the night and you went over there and said, hey, I'm all for you guys getting some hoops in, but can you not be playing basketball at 11:30 p.m.? Or it's 6 in the morning. That would make sense to me. They got a 20 minutes. They got a 20 minute. You can't even get a good game of 3-on-3. You can't even get a good sweat going on. Why are we hating on the younger generation? I encourage all the kids to go outside and play on the blacktop. That's where you build your character at. Going outside and playing basketball with your friends. This is terrible.
I mean, the fact that they circled back, they filed the petition that they put the basket too incorrectly zoned, then they got it fixed, and then they were still angry about it. That is, what's the term, Karen behavior? Goodness gracious.
That's nuts. I can't believe we hating on the youngins outside just trying to play a little basketball. We hating on the kids just trying to go out there, get a little run, a little hoop it up. Kids, go outside. I don't see enough kids going outside. I know you guys see it too. You drive by a park. That park used to be filled with kids outside playing basketball. Now the park empty. I don't know what they're doing. They're inside playing Nintendo. No, go outside and play basketball. It's terrible, man. Sad. I hope these kids get to continue to keep their basketball hoop up. I hope somebody gives them a nicer basketball hoop than the one that they got. That's what I hope happens to these kids. And shame on those neighbors for hating on the young boys. That's crazy. That's nuts. I can't believe we're doing that to the young kids outside just trying to get a good run. Coming up on the other side, we may have a topic that some of you will suggest I am a hater, but I'm not a hater. I'm simply here just to provide the stats and numbers about what the Chiefs are doing. I'll explain. Keep it right here, it's The Drive.